What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line I got my not-so-much pick-and-pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Straight surviving out here, man. Just trying to get a few shots up on Papa Shot and, relaxing.
A few shots up on Papa Shot.
That's all I got nowadays. This guy.
It's more than any of us have, man.
It's true.
Enjoy it. Iso Raj, how you feeling?
I'm doing good, and enjoyed those last two episodes.
Did you really? Did you like them more than 3 and 4?
Personally, yeah, I did. I thought they were just better content and more interesting storylines. I felt like Rodman's episode could have been really good, but they left out a lot.
Yeah. All right, well, obviously, we're talking about episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance. We saw a lot of, Kobe Bryant, obviously shouts to him and his family. You got MJ's last All-Star game at MSG as a Bull, not his last All-Star game, but as a Bull. And, we got a lot of stuff from the Air Jordans releasing in 84. You got Dream Team work. You got a lot of stuff in these last two episodes, man. Raj, what was your biggest takeaway then?
From the episodes, I found the part where Jordan addressed the Isaiah Thomas not making the Dream Team to be like the best point of the episodes. And just to hear how Jordan respected him, still respects him, probably doesn't consider him a friend, but he kind of did indirectly say that he knew that Isaiah Thomas wasn't going to be on the team and he was cool with that. But he wasn't the one to actually say it. It was more implied when he got the call.
I think we all know that's bullshit. Jordan orchestrated everything, and talk of everyone else on the team also not liking Isaiah, I think, was nonsense. I mean, some of the guys probably didn't like him because they played against the Bad Boys, but I think that's a total fallacy that Jordan didn't orchestrate that based on what we've seen so far and what we know of Jordan.
Yeah, Jordan's had when was it? That was 92, right? So almost 30 years ago. He's had almost 30 years to orchestrate an idea behind this. I mean, obviously he's going to blame everyone else but himself. I don't believe it either.
Yeah, and there were some other guys on there that they interviewed. They also said that, other people on the team or half the Olympic team didn't think that Isaiah should be on there for varying reasons. And I think they're just saying that to stay in Michael's good books.
Yeah, but if you look at what their argument was, it's kind of tough because this is almost an all-star game where, based off of merit, Isaiah Thomas deserved to be there. I think every player on that team knew that, but they're kind of factoring in chemistry, and then it gets a little messy because then who really deserves to be there, and then obviously David Stern, the commissioner at the time, wanted to make this a big branding for these are the NBA players, these are the best players they have. And obviously, he'd rather have Michael Jordan and Karl Malone and Scottie Pippen play rather than Isaiah Thomas play and those other guys sit out because they didn't want to play with Isaiah.
Just an educated guess. I'm guessing that Michael told everybody that it's either him or me. And then behind the scenes, they made it so, they made it seem like a lot of other people didn't want Isaiah. They just totally changed the story. But I think it ultimately, Jordan gave them an ultimatum and they made the right decision, obviously.
Well, I don't know if it was just Jordan, because at one point they did mention how, Isaiah had a falling out with Magic in 92 already. Bird obviously didn't like Isaiah from all the Bad Boys days. Obviously, we know the Scotty history with the Bad Boys as well. So you can sort of understand where they're coming from with that narrative and that, half the team probably really did dislike Isaiah. But that being said, Jordan is the full catalyst. If Jordan said, no, it's fine, I'm cool with Isaiah being on the team, then they would have kicked somebody out for him. There's no way. At that point, he was the second best point guard in league history.
And you also have to think about the future too, right? Because this is the first time where, all these guys got together on the Olympic team. So they were probably looking ahead and saying, Jordan can be on our 96 team and onwards from there too, right? So I think looking into the future, would you rather have Jordan for at least two Olympics potentially? Or do you want old, Isaiah Thomas for maybe one Olympics and then piss Jordan and some other guys off?
Yeah, definitely not worth it. It is interesting that Chuck Daly was a coach of that team and Isaiah still couldn't get on, though.
I think Coach Daly secretly hated him, too.
Oh, get out of here. Shut up.
It would have been nice to hear what Chuck Daly had to say, though.
Yeah, he probably would have just said that it wasn't up to him, then it's up to like the higher-ups and, you know, the typical stuff, just putting blame on somebody else.
Yeah,
right?
Pass the buck.
Because he's not going to talk trash about his own starting point guard. Josh, what did you get out of these?
I was just sort of disappointed with this episode in that it didn't show enough Olympic footage and what those guys sort of, went through while they were in Spain and being like, you know, mass superstars. It wasn't enough footage, I don't think. Like, I've seen more footage in other documentaries than this one. And it would have been more interesting to see, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff of those guys, like, playing cards on the plane and stuff like that. And just how I've heard, like, I've seen videos where, like, Charles Barkley went out at night on his own and he had, like, thousands of people following him around the streets. And then when you go into bars, like, they basically shut down the bars because there's too many people in there just trying to get a look at Barkley and trying to talk to him, and, you know, buy him a drink and everything. So, and then also, I thought there was going to be more footage from that infamous game between MJ and Magic Johnson, too.
Oh, the scrimmage?
Yeah, I'm hoping that footage is eventually going to be released. I mean, this is, like, the best time to release it, too. Right, I think people pay a lot of money to see that footage. So if they like streamed it and charged everyone $20, like they make a killing.
Would you pay $20 to see that game?
180p.
Like, I still pay for it.
Yeah, I mean,
there was decent footage from what they showed. Like, you can watch that easily. And with the technology that we have now, like, they could probably improve the footage a little bit. But even watching what they showed, the very small amount of footage that they actually showed, it was pretty good. It was decent. It's not what we're used to, obviously, but you could definitely watch that.
Yeah, I think we didn't get as much footage just because it's not based on the Dream Team, right? Like, it's purely a Jordan documentary. So why would you talk about, you know, Charles Barkley going into bars or Stockton just wandering the streets and nobody knowing who he is kind of stuff? Or even the relationship that Magic and Bird had. You know what I mean?
I think it speaks to, like, the future and, like, the relationships that he had with those guys. And then, ultimately, like, I think the biggest thing from the Olympics was the passing of the torch from, you know, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and Michael Jordan. I don't know if they spent as much time as they needed to, because that sort of, like, showed where Jordan went from, you know, maybe obviously being the top three in terms of superstars at that point. He was probably number one anyway, but just the fact that he turned into, like, the alpha male at that point.
Yeah, that was interesting. You're right. If they had focused on that a bit more, it would have been cool, or just his dynamic amongst other players in practices. I actually wanted to see him take Clyde Drexler to town. Imagine that. Drexler gets his ass beat in the 92 finals, and then like a couple of months later has to scrimmage against this guy all over again. Man, that must be demoralizing. How do you deal with that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I bet Drexler was hanging out with some other guys, like the end of the bench dudes, like Leitner.
The disrespect, putting Drexler with Leitner of all people. Not even Stockton or Malone, just all the way to the end.
I remember seeing a clip of like Stockton in a different documentary just walking or wandering the streets of Spain and nobody having any idea who he was. They probably just thought they said they thought he was like some accountant from like Georgia or something.
Yeah, that was the 30 for 30 that they released, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Like a few years ago? That was a really good one. The Dream Team 30 for 30?
Yeah, that was fun.
I wish there was more coverage on like Kukoc coming into these games as well. Obviously, they wouldn't have had that footage because it's on the other side, but it would have been cool to see his approach. Because I like that, you know, whenever you hear these stories about the Dream Team, it's how they dominated everyone. And you saw that in the first game against Croatia where Kukoc didn't score. And then he came back with the, like, no, screw you guys kind of attitude. I kind of like that. Showed that he wasn't a little punk.
At the same time, though, like, after they showed that he had a pretty good bounce back game, they showed the score at the end of the game, and it was, like, 114-84. So.
Yeah, but he still had, like, 17 or 20-something.
I just thought that was funny. Threw that in, though. It's like, oh, yeah, Kukoc bounced back with, like, 20 points or whatever, and they showed the score. It's like, oh, that didn't really matter. Probably got that in garbage time against Leitner.
You know Leitner wasn't touching the floor.
Yeah, Leitner probably got it at some point for garbage time. Couple minutes in the fourth quarter.
No, you know he got those buckets on Drexler. Let's be real.
Yeah, true.
Oh, man. What did you guys think of Jordan specifically hiding the Reebok logo? You know how, Josh, I'm sure you're aware of this, how Ethan Sherwood Strauss released that book recently, The Victory Machine?
Yep.
About the 17 and 18 Warriors. At one point, he says that shoe companies are the real employers of these players because, one, they pay more, and they're the longest tenure employers at this point, right? If you look at guys like LeBron and KD, they're with Nike for their whole career and even before their career starts in the NBA, whereas they can change teams at any point and, like, you know, at any point, whether it's year 5 or year 15. But the shoe company always stays loyal to them. So it was interesting that Jordan did everything he could to just, you know, drape a giant American flag over his shoulder just to hide that one word on his uniform.
Yeah, I found it funny too because, like, initially they showed Michael Jordan and, like, him actually signing with Nike and getting his first shoe deal and how they were treating him kind of like a tennis star, like an individual in a team sport, and how that, like, that wasn't the trend at the time. And then 10 years or 8 years fast forward, like, he couldn't be seen with another logo. It's funny too because Reebok really didn't have much of a stake in basketball. I think it was just overall the U.S. Olympic team. I didn't know, like, really what the purpose was. Like, I think it just showed that Jordan was very loyal to Nike and he never wanted to be seen wearing anything else. But, like, I didn't think it was such a big deal that it had to make the episode. But
I think it's him just being loyal to the money, right? Like, this goes back to, well, like, a part where we saw, I forget if it was before or after, but the whole issue with him saying that Republicans buy shoes as well. Jordan's all about his money at the end of the day, right? Like, he clearly stipulated that he's not an activist and that he'll donate the money for, what's that guy's name?
Gent.
Yeah. He said that, you know, I'll give you money, but I'm not an activist. I'm not going to ride with this. So don't put my name in anything, but here. I mean, at the end of the day, Jordan just cares about himself and about his money. You weren't going to get in his way. So I thought that was really interesting to see.
Yeah, I didn't realize that Jordan was, like, pretty much solely responsible for Nike going from, you know, just a shoe company to being what they are today. And that, I think he got paid $250,000 to sign with Nike. And they expected a return of like $3 million in shoe sales the first year. And they ended up at $126 million, which is insane back then.
$3 million over the first 4 years.
Oh, was it? I thought it was the first year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
How crazy is that?
Insane.
Yeah, that Jordan's a bad dude, man.
The other thing that caught my eye with episode 5 is obviously the Kobe stuff. So, you know, them being in the All-Star game, the behind-the-scenes footage of Jordan talking a lot of smack about him and sort of jokingly in the locker room with all the other Eastern Conference All-Stars. I think that was really cool to watch.
Yeah. Did you notice how in awe all those guys were of Jordan whenever he spoke?
Yeah.
Like, they showed Grant Hill, Penny Hardaway, and they were just, like, staring at the guy.
Yeah, like, the room went silent whenever he spoke. It was like a professor talking or, like, your like, childhood hero. And these are, like, his contemporaries. Some of them are even probably older than Jordan. And they just gave him so much respect because he earned it. And he was, at that point, in his final year, he had everyone's respect. And, like, Jordan's Jordan at that point. Like, you don't win 5 championships in the 5 years that you were playing without his skill and his talent.
Yeah, one of the infamous lines that he said in that documentary about Kobe, he's like, he don't let the game come to him. He just go out there and take it. I'm going to make this a one-on-one game. And then he did. And he basically saw in Kobe for the few possessions that they actually got to go one-on-one.
That was great. That was a lot of fadeaways.
Yeah, and then, I mean, Kobe went up to him, like, later on in the game and started asking questions about his, like, turnaround jump shot, and apparently Michael gave him a bunch of guidance and gave him his phone number, too, so that's sort of, like, where the love affair between those two started.
Yeah, the big brother, little brother relationship.
Yeah, and also, like, right at the end, Jordan said something along the lines of, like, I'll see you down the road, and obviously 20 years later, and they had a level of friendship and relationship, and obviously with Kobe passing away this year, it just hit a little harder.
I wonder if Jordan being with Nike had anything to do with Kobe switching from Adidas to Nike as well, just to, you know, follow in his footsteps, like, basically the whole way, because we obviously know that Kobe's essentially his whole game was patterned towards everything Jordan did, right? From the way he leaned, his footwork, the way his shot even looked. So even his shoes, his image, Yeah, at one point he wore his armband in the exact same spot as Jordan did. Like, every little piece was to replicate the guy.
Mamba mentality.
What'd you think of, I guess, I don't know, we can move into the gambling portion of all this, because I think that's where this is going to end up, right? Where Jordan in, was it the 93 Eastern Conference Finals against the Knicks?
I think it was 92. I might be wrong, though.
92?
No, I think it was 92.
Let me check. Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, so they go, no, it was 93.
Was it?
Yeah, 93. Because I remember, okay, at one point, you're listening to a lot of the, you know how they went through like the media clips of people? Mike Mad Dog is going, how can you have that kind of focus and go to Atlantic City to gamble on the night before a game? And the whole time I was thinking, dude, this guy won back-to-back championships. How are you questioning his focus? Like, I think he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and it's clear that he strange. Like drinks all the time, has been gambling a long time as well, and then, you know, goes golfing whenever he wants to. So he's been doing all these things and basically being like, you know, the prototypical alcoholic junkie gambler while still putting up 40 points against every team in the playoffs. It's pretty impressive.
Junkie gambler. Yeah, it's true, though. It's wild, dude. I don't know. This whole gambling thing was... It really showed a different light of Jordan and, you know, obviously how his reputation started to change after that, right? Because that's when we start seeing the other side of him, essentially. He's not just this suit-wearing basketball player who's endorsed by Nike, Gatorade, McDonald's, but there's like a dark side to Jordan's persona that no one really knew about at the time.
Did either of you guys do a double take when they said the guy that he owed money to was named Slim Bular? I thought they were talking about, like, yeah... The Indian kid from Simba, a couple years. Man. I was like, no, he can't be that old. Then they showed a picture of him. I'm like, okay, that's not him.
Oh, that's great. Simbular has a Jerry curl.
And he went to jail for a few years.
Yeah. I don't know. That was pretty interesting. And then obviously, Jordan, being like the weirdo he is, used this whole media narrative to sort of re-engage himself against the Knicks all over again. Maybe it was a bad idea for the media to turn this into a thing.
The New York media.
Yeah, specifically the New York media. Because if they didn't turn this into a thing, maybe Jordan just like chills and doesn't care about the Eastern Conference Finals as much. Instead, he comes out with a vengeance and just dominates.
I think he would have done that anyway based on what we've seen of him. In that, you know, he always plays, you know, full board every single game because he's always worried about, you know, the kid in the stands that... has never seen him before. He wants him to see like how MJ operates and how much better he is than everyone else.
Yo, come on, man. The kid in the 300s can't see what Jordan's doing, okay?
But they can see the scoreboard when they see 40 next to his name. Or 55.
True.
Speaking of, did you guys notice when they showed the Bulls visiting the Atlanta Hawks and they were playing in the Georgia Dome with the attendance was like 62,000? And some people are watching...
insane.
We're watching a basketball game from at least like 300 meters away. Like that was, absurd.
Yeah, that was nuts, man. I don't know, that's wild. Imagine any athlete right now having that kind of presence to pull 60,000 people into a stadium. Like a single athlete. Because ain't nobody going to see the Atlanta Hawks in the early 90s. You know what I mean?
Nope.
Or even in the late 90s, sorry. Like Steve Smith was their main attraction. Nah. Sorry, man. Smitty, you the man, but there's only one Jordan. LeBron can't do this. Kobe couldn't have done this. There was no way.
Yeah, no, it's like, again, I think Barkley said this actually after the episodes aired when he was interviewed by ESPN. But even though there might be athletes who dominate just as much as Michael Jordan, there's very few, but there may be like Tom Brady or like Sidney Crosby in hockey, and there are very few athletes that just have the charisma that Jordan had. And Jordan really like paved the way for the NBA. Like the sport was expanding, and I think every athlete, regardless of what sport you played, looked at Michael Jordan and looked at that killer instinct to be able to perform in the clutch. Because even though he's probably had a few shots where he didn't make in the clutch, it seemed that every time the game was on the line or the series or the championship, Jordan had the ball in his hands, and you knew he was going to make that shot.
Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. Super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon.
I liked how in this episode, though, they went into like the bad side of Jordan with Sam Smith's book, with the Jordan Rules. And they didn't go too much into it, especially after they sort of outed Horace Grant as a snitch, which was sort of disappointing to me. I mean, they showed BJ Armstrong talking about it, and he was saying that Horace couldn't have been the only person that talked to Sam Smith about what was going on in those years. And I think it's pretty obvious who it was. I think it's pretty obviously Phil Jackson. I think Phil Jackson was, you know, somebody who loved to talk, obviously. He had a couple books himself afterwards. And I think he was getting that narrative out there because he wanted to fix certain things, and he thought the best way to do it was to go through the media.
Wow.
Conspiracy theory, Josh, on the line here.
Wow.
Jeez.
You heard it first.
I was going to say it was... I was going to say it's Jerry Krause starting his restructuring very early.
I don't think it was Krause because I don't think Krause went to a lot of these practices and, you know, a lot of the behind the, you know, scenes stuff. I don't think he'd be involved with because Jordan would probably see him there and tell him to get the fuck out.
Yeah, no, I was actually kidding. What if it was Scotty?
Yeah, I mean, Scotty's another one. Maybe Scotty wanted to take over the team and he started all this nonsense about Jordan. Or I guess it wasn't nonsense, but rumors about Jordan back then anyway.
Yeah. And then he did get his team for 2 years.
Yeah, so maybe it worked.
Like a year and a half.
It worked for a little bit.
It worked until he didn't get to take the final shots in playoff games.
Yeah. I just thought they didn't really show enough about, like when they basically called out Horace Grant, there wasn't a lot of, footage of him talking about it. I mean, he basically denied it, but... not in a very convincing way.
Yeah, we're friends, but no, I didn't say shit to the guy, man. Come on now. It's all right. Yo, did you like Scotty and Mike drinking Miller Lights after the game out of solo cups? Scotty telling the cameraman to stop recording, trying to be all classy and shit.
Yeah, and then Michael talking about other players from the 80s back when he was on, you know, his first couple Bulls teams, smoking at halftime and drinking at halftime, and what they were doing after the game was nothing.
Woo! Traveling cocaine circus, man.
Yep.
I want those stories to come out.
Yeah, I don't think those are ever coming out of the vault. Those are staying in the vault.
Those are the ones I really want.
The other thing that stood out to me is like going back to the alpha side of Michael Jordan, in that they talked about him punching Will Perdue in the face in practice. And then he told certain players not to pass to a certain player, which was clearly Will Perdue. Or else he wouldn't pass them the ball ever again.
Wait, why is it clearly Will Perdue?
I mean, he did punch him in the face, right? So clearly he didn't like the guy. And plus, he made a joke about Will Perdue's last name. I think they're in the Big Ten, if I'm not mistaken. Or one of the big conferences. He's like, yeah, you don't deserve that last name because your name is essentially not good enough in order to, you know, for you to have that last name. You should have like a lower school type of name like Vermont or something like that. Shouldn't be Purdue.
That's harsh, man.
I thought that was hilarious. That was in one of the previous episodes.
But he also punched Steve Kerr in the face and then ended up giving him the final shot.
Yeah, but I think Steve Kerr fought back, and I think that's what Michael wanted to see, right? Like, he would always test you in practice, and if you didn't, you know, show that you were a fighter in some way, shape, or form, then he would just, you know, he would be out on you, essentially, and get management to take care of you and bring you out back and, you know, essentially shoot you, so.
Wow, okay. Getting Jerry Krause to do his dirty work.
Yeah, because, I mean, Will Perdue wasn't with that team very long, right?
Yeah, I actually forgot he was on that team, to be honest. Very unmemorable. Stint with the team.
I'm sort of surprised Luke Longley lasted as long as he did because he seems like a very chill individual. A guy who went with, you know, Phil Jackson back to the ranch and smoked a lot of weed back in his days. So I didn't really see him as a fighter, but, you know, I guess he was.
Yeah, well, he must have been for a three-peat champion. Yeah. Will Perdue, three-time world champion. Or Luke Longley, three-time world champion, man.
Indeed.
Don't disrespect the game.
And then the last thing that really stood out to me is, you know, Jordan talking about Dan Majerle and how much Jerry Krause loved Dan Majerle and that he wanted to make a point that, you know, Dan Majerle is not a good defensive player, and I'm going to prove that in this series.
Whoa, he didn't say that.
Yes, he did.
Okay, he said that Dan Majerle isn't on the same level as me. Doesn't mean he's not a good defender.
No, he said that as well. He talked about his defense, and he said that Jerry Krause was really into him in terms of being an offensive player, but also a defensive player, and he wanted to prove that he wasn't too.
I interpreted that very differently than you did.
Yeah, same. But speaking about Michael Jordan and comparing himself to other players, there's two times in the two episodes. Like, the first time was the championship against the Trailblazers when he went up against Clyde Drexler, and Clyde averaged 25 points, like 6.7 assists, 6.6 rebounds that season, and Michael Jordan was like, he's not anywhere close to me. And then that year where he faced Barkley in the finals the year after, and Barkley was the reigning MVP, and Barkley averaged a ridiculous 25 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists, and Jordan was like, I probably should have won it that year too. So that just shows you what kind of competitor Jordan was, and even though he might not have had the best stats year after year, but he still had amazing stats, he just knew that he was a better player, and he didn't want other people saying that other players were on his level.
Hold on. Did you guys watch that, like, the clips of Clyde Drexler against Jordan carefully? Clyde did not put up a hand once while playing defense. He just let Jordan blow by him every damn time he wanted to. And then in that infamous game where Jordan has 35 in the first half, he was leaving him open for threes all the time.
No, but that was a strategy back then against Michael, right? Like, there's a reason why he wasn't putting a hand up, is because he wanted him to take outside shots versus getting into the paint. That was a strategy back then.
No, I understand that. But you know how it is. If somebody's cooking, they're cooking. So if Jordan has 20 in the first half, you're going to, what, keep not playing defense? Are you kidding me? At a certain point, you just got to realize that someone's hot. I don't care what era it is.
Yeah, I mean, the Spurs had the same type of defense against LeBron in the first and probably the second series too, where anytime he would, you know, run a pick and roll, they would just go under trying to force him to take the outside shot. So I think it's the same idea here, but more to the extreme.
I mean, if someone's hitting Josh, he had 35 points in the first half.
Yeah, I guess they figured he couldn't do it again the next half, but it didn't really matter at that point.
Sorry, let us just go into like a 15-point deficit at halftime. No problem. Come on, man. Also, what do you think Clyde Drexler shot for his career from behind the arc?
I think he shot pretty well, didn't he? Probably like 38%?
No.
32%
from behind the arc. This guy never shot over 40%. Obviously, 40% is pretty high. His highest percentage from behind the arc in his career? 36%. Clyde Drexler could not shoot very well.
Yeah, he was more of a mid-range guy, but I thought he was like a higher percentage player because he didn't really take that many threes back then because that wasn't really the game plan.
Yeah, because he couldn't. It was kind of like Kevin Garnett shooting those mid-rangers. Couldn't take that step back.
Yeah, he could have, but he was so good at them. Why do it, right?
Well, he was like a driver, like everyone else at that time, right? Every wing player was a slasher first and then a shooter second.
Yeah.
Such is the time. How many times did Charles Barkley make it to the finals? Just the one?
Yes. I think the closest he got after that, I mean, he made a couple of like conference finals, I think.
Conference finals. But yeah. The years before, it was always the Lakers and the Trailblazers. Afterwards, it was the Rockets pretty consistently. And then we had the Sonics and then the Jazz, right? So Barkley only made it once.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. I mean, I think he came in a couple years after Philadelphia won the championship too in 83. So he missed out on that too, obviously.
He literally missed it by that year. Like, they won and then they drafted him. I think so. It was 84, wasn't it? Poor guy, man. The one time he had a chance to get there, and then, you know, they almost had him. They almost had Mike. And then, like, we already brought it up, but Raj, you quoted it already. There's only one player that you don't mind losing to at that point, and it's Mike.
A league of his own, man. A league of his own. Also, did you guys notice that Donovan Mitchell tweeted that, like, and something that I noticed, that Michael Jordan had his own little office in the team locker room? like with a desk and like his own TV and like you just chill out there, give out tickets to other players. Like he was like associate GM or something.
I always thought that was just like a random room that they had. I don't think it was for him specifically, was it?
But like no one else was hanging out there, and like you even saw, I don't know who it was, but they asked for tickets from Jordan and he's like, anywhere will do, and he just like hands them a ticket from like his little desk drawer and he's like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, Randy Brown. That was when Jordan referred to himself as God.
yes, yeah.
That was good. And then obviously we all saw the footage playing whatever this quarter throwing game or whatever that is with the security guards. That was pretty good.
He was getting us ready for quarantine, man.
Yo, the guy got worked by that security guard.
And the security guard gave the shrug, which is now like the most popular meme on Twitter and Facebook. So,
yeah, that was epic. And the last thing I got, obviously, is Jordan's license plate being 2 Trey. That's a flex. That's a classic Jordan flex, just calling it out before it happens that I'm going to get my double three-peat. No big deal.
I mean, the last thing that stood out for me was after Game 5 when they lost to the Suns and all of his teammates were pretty dejected about having to get back on the plane and go to Phoenix for possibly 2 games. He told them all to only bring 1 suit. Because we're only going to be playing 1 game. I thought that was pretty gangster.
Yeah, that's badass.
I think that's sort of where, like, you know, a couple of years ago when Washington wore all black against Boston, I think that sort of stemmed from what Jordan did back then.
Didn't work out so well, though.
No, not this time.
Oh, man. Also, one thing that people need to know is don't shit talk superstar players. Because, like, I don't know if you guys remember this, but they said in Chicago they started boarding up all the storefronts and stuff, getting ready for the parade. And Barkley just said, no, hell no. I have to drive through this. I have to see everything for myself. I see all these boarded up stores. Hell no, you're not getting your parade when I'm here. I like that. Stop messing around with superstar players, man. They're the most petty people in the world, and anything will get them going. Yeah. All right, any final thoughts? You guys good?
Yeah, I mean, it was a fun couple episodes, but I think episode 6... in my opinion, was the best one so far because it showed me a lot of stuff I didn't necessarily know or confirm at that point. But I think there's a lot of content in episode 6, and it was probably the most entertaining episode for me so far.
I like them all. I thought episode 5 was great, and it just felt like upbeat. But honestly, they could have made this documentary 20 episodes, and I would look forward to it every Sunday. So again, 6 more days until Sunday.
True that, true that. Yeah, episode 6 is probably the best one. I think as the episodes go on, they just get progressively better. So, hoping that 7, 8, 9, 10 are going to be of epic proportions.
Well, I mean, 7's now going into, his retirement, so that's going to be very interesting. And hopefully they get into, you know, the conspiracy theories and different things behind his father getting murdered. So, that's going to be really good.
Yeah, I want to know what Sam Smith has to say about all this.
Yes.
Anyways, that's all the time we have for this week. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. We're on all the major podcast platforms like Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Stitcher. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Stretch4Pod. And until next time, peace.